Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Let me repeatedly offer my respectful obeisances unto the bee-like devotees who always taste the honey of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If even a doggish non-devotee somehow takes shelter of such devotees, he enjoys the aroma of the lotus flower. Purport. The example of a dog is very significant in this connection. A dog naturally does not become a devotee at any time. But still it is sometimes found that a dog of a devotee gradually becomes a devotee also. We have actually seen that a dog has no respect even for the tulsi plant. Indeed, a dog is especially inclined to pass urine on the tulsi plant. Therefore, the dog is the number one non-devotee. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement is so strong that even a dog-like non-devotee can gradually become a devotee by the association of a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Sivananda Sena, a great householder devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, attracted a dog on the street while going to Jagannath Puri. The dog began to follow him and ultimately went to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and was liberated. Similarly, cats and dogs in the household of Srivas Thakur were also liberated. Cats and dogs and other animals are not expected to become devotees, but in the association of a pure devotee, they are also delivered. Sri Chaitanya Padamboja Madhupebhyo Namo Namaha Katanchid Ashrayayesham Swapitad Gandhabad Bhavet. Let me repeatedly offer my respectful obeisances unto the bee-like devotees who always taste the honey of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If even a doggish non-devotee somehow takes shelter of such devotees, he enjoys the aroma of the lotus flower. So we have many examples in our movement of people who, like the dog who was passing urine on the tulsi plant, eventually became devotees, even though at first they were very offensive. So I remember one devotee saying that whenever the Harinam party would pass, he would always go to the other side of the street, and sometimes even he would even throw rotten fruit and vegetables on the Harinam party. But he was so absorbed in wanting to throw rotten fruit and vegetables on the Harinam party that he was meditating every day, when is the Harinam party going to come by, and stocking up his rotten fruit and vegetables. And gradually, by meditating on the Harinam party, he became a devotee. Of course, one of the most interesting stories is that of our temple president in Dallas, Texas, Nityananda. Anybody who here knows that story? I don't want to tell. Okay, you don't know the story. All right, great. So Nityananda was a big lawyer in Fiji, and he was very politically connected, very important man. And being a very important man, he worked very long hours, and he would often come home at 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, right next to his house, there was the temple, which was just a residential house in a residential neighborhood. And the devotees had a policy, which probably wasn't exactly the best policy, of putting loudspeakers on the outside of their temple. So, you know, this happens a lot in India. There's now a petition to the Indian government to forbid loudspeakers blaring in the holy dom. But especially if you go to Vrindavan, you'll find a lot of the temples have these loudspeakers blaring at full volume 24 hours a day. And of course, they don't actually blast consistently 24 hours, or you could kind of block it out and sleep, but it's up and down. You know, so it'll be quiet for 10 minutes, and then it's blaring, and it's so loud that the sound is distorted, right? Any of you have been to Vrindavan? You had this experience. And then, of course, there's also the processions going on the street with the loudspeakers that are turned up to distortion levels, and you figure everybody in the party is deaf and so forth. Anyway, so our temple, which was a regular house in a residential neighborhood, it wasn't zoned as a temple, we put these loudspeakers on the outside of the building, and we blared From Mangal Arti Gone. And I actually remember one time when I flew from America to India, and I was going directly to Mayapur, but I had to go through Delhi, and I had many hours of layover in Delhi. I think I arrived in Delhi at something like midnight, which is common, and then my flight to Mayapur wasn't until 5 or 6 in the afternoon. And I thought, well, let me get some rest after the 35-hour journey. I'll go to the temple and I'll sleep. You know, by the time I got to the temple in Delhi, it was probably about 1 or 2 in the morning, And I thought, I'm not going to set an alarm clock. I'm just going to sleep until I wake up naturally, you know. So I go to sleep, and then they were piping Mangalartik into the guest house. You know, so I'm lying in my bed thinking, okay, I'll sleep through Mangalartik. And then it was the Singha prayers, okay. You know, and then it was Tulsi prayers, and I thought, I'll forget it. You know, I'll just get up and go to the temple room on 2 hours of sleep. Anyway, Hare Krishna. So we were doing the same thing in Fiji, and they were piping the Mangalartik outside on the loudspeakers. And here is this big lawyer, very highly politically connected in the country. It's a small country. And he's getting home at 2 a.m. every night after working so hard. And, you know, like what I was going through in Delhi, you know, and you go, okay, I'm going to sleep, you know, samsara dhamma. And so he would ask the devotees, please turn off your speakers. And they said no. And he asked them many times and they said no. So then he mounted a campaign. And he went to the political leaders and he was trying to have our movement thrown out of Fiji. And to do this, he was a wealthy man, taking out full-page advertisements in the papers and the magazines and making a big campaign all over the country to throw the devotees out of Fiji. So then at one point, someone mentioned to him that the leader of our movement in Fiji, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, was going to be visiting, and perhaps if he spoke directly to the person in charge, he might get some settlement of his case. So he came to the temple and asked to see Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj knew who he was, and I'm not sure if this was intentional, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj kept him waiting for many hours before he would see him. And this is one of the descriptions of Krishna being all honorable, that the demigods have to wait in Dwarka to see him. And this is one of the symbols that somebody is a bigger personality than you, right? That you have to wait for them. So he's waiting and waiting to see Tamal Krishna Maharaj, waiting for hours. Finally, he comes in to see him and he presents his case. And Nityananda at that time was, as many people in Fiji, he was a Hindu, and he particularly worshipped Lord Shiva. So he and Tamal Krishna Maharaj had some discussion, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, all right, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a challenge. He said, 1 month, practice all of the principles of Krishna consciousness, strictly. And after that 1 month, if you're not convinced that this is real, we will close our temple in Fiji and leave the island completely. We won't preach in Fiji anymore. Would you have had the courage to say something like that to somebody? Anyway, that's what he did. So Nityananda said, okay. And he thought, that'll be simple. Something like the son of the Brahmin with Jakshi Gopal, when they had the agreement, you know, if the deity comes personally to bear witness, and the son thought, well, deity's not going to come to bear witness. Okay, I agree. So this lawyer thought, sure, you know, I'll practice Krishna consciousness strictly for a month. And at the end of that, you'll leave Fiji simple. Right? Or when Arjuna promised to commit suicide, to go into the fire if he didn't kill Jayadrath by the end of the day. And the crews thought, okay, great. You know, now we've won the war. We just have to hide Jayadrath for the whole day. So the lawyer was thinking like that. And he went home and he started chanting 16 rounds, following the four good principles, offering all his food, reading Bhagavatam every day, you know, everything. It's everything. So at the end of 2 weeks, he realized that Krishna consciousness was real. And he went back and he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I surrender. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, all right, now you have to take out full-page advertisements in all of the newspapers and magazines glorifying the Hare Krishna movement. You have to drop your case and also promote our movement. So he did that. And then he was also thinking, as he was reading Prabhupada's books, I really have to accept a guru. What should I do? What should I do? And he had a dream that Lord Shiva, who had been his worshipful deity for many, many years, came to him in a dream and said, you must accept Tamal Krishna Maharaj as your spiritual master. So he did that also. I heard this story directly from Nityananda. So even one who wants to pass urine on the Tulsi plant can become a great devotee of the Lord. Right? Of course, we have the example of all so many demons that Krishna interacted with. Like there's the demon Agasura, Krishna entered into his body. And then Lord Brahma and his associates is described, they saw Agasura accept a Vaikuntha form and attain to the Vaikuntha loka in an airplane. And this is one of the reasons why Lord Brahma came right after that to steal the cowherd boys and the cows, because he was wondering, you know, what's going on? We knew this demon Agasura. You know, we were all demigods, we were familiar with this demon Agasura. And now we're seeing that he's attained a Vaikuntha form. So here it's explained that what is the key that can make even the worst person into a pure devotee. So often we look for this key, huh? What's the secret? What's the trick? Is there one thing I can do? Because, you know, maybe we don't think we're that fallen like a dog. I mean, if we really look in our heart, maybe we do think we're that fallen like a dog. But even if we don't think we're as fallen as a dog, still I'm sure we find that we have so many difficulties and disqualifications, huh? We're practicing bhakti, it's like, man, this attachment and this problem and this, and it's so difficult. How am I ever going to make advancement? And is there something I can do? You know, is there something I can do to overcome all of these disqualifications, to overcome all of my sinful tendencies and all of my vices? So here what's given is, what do you do? What does Krishna Das Kaviraj here say? Anybody remember from the verse from 10 minutes ago? No? Become a devotee of the devotees. Yes, associate with the devotees. Associate with the devotees. So Rupa Goswami gives us 64 angas of bhakti. And then he says three of them are most important. What are the three he says are most important, all of you bhakti shastris and bhakti vaibhavis? Yes. Accept the spiritual master through initiation and take shelter and follow the instructions. Those are the three most important. And the spiritual master, of course, is a devotee. Yes? In other words, take shelter of a devotee. Follow the instructions of a devotee. Take initiation from the devotee. And then Rupa Goswami gives the five most potent items. What are the five most potent? Living in a holy dham. Sadhu Sangha. Deity worship, Bhagavatam and other scriptures, and chanting the holy name. Now, generally, we talk about that chanting the holy name is the key. Generally, that's what we say, chanting the holy name, and particularly chanting without offense, and particularly chanting with attention. If you read in Madhurya Kadambini, you come to the conclusion that chanting the holy name with attention is the key that opens everything else. That if you chant with attention, you get free of all your offenses on chanting, and if you get free of all your offenses on chanting, you'll get free of all your other offenses, you'll get free of all your anarthas, and you attain Krishna Prema. So generally we understand that that's the key. But here it's given that the key is Sadhu Sangha. And we can also understand it like that. Satam prasanga mamavirya samvido bhavanti ritkarna rasayanam kata tajoshanadvat bhavargavartmani shraddha ratir bhakti anu krunishti. So if one's going to go from the shraddha to prema, one does it by the association of devotees. And I thought I'd read a couple things here. This is from the Nectar of Instruction, text 4. What's the Nectar of Instruction, text 4? Anybody know? The six loving exchanges, yes. And Prabhupada, in the purport to that verse, says the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been established to facilitate these six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees. That's why Prabhupada's giving in this purport, that's his reason for establishing the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And a little further on in the purport, he says, the life of the Krishna conscious society is nourished by these six types of loving exchanges among the members. And then looking at the negative. So, now we'll look at the positive here first and then the negative. So this is in the 11th canto, chapter 12. This is Krishna talking to Uddhava. And he says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, my dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. One may perform the Astanga Yoga system, engage in the philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice nonviolence and other ordinary principles of piety, chant the Vedas, perform penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrificial performances, dig wells, plant trees, perform other public welfare activities, give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship the demigods, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places, or accept major and minor disciplinary injunctions, but even by performing such activities, one does not bring me under his control. That's a pretty strong statement, right? All these other things that one can do, it's not that one shouldn't do those things. We should take vows and follow ekadasi and chant confidential mantras. But Krishna says, if you don't come under the shelter of my devotees, I will not come under your control. In other words, you'll not attain bhava. But if you come under the control of my devotees, if you associate with my devotees, then I come under your control. And it's the end of this purport. Says, Srila Madhvacharya has quoted from Vedic literature that if one offends the Lord's devotees and does not learn to associate with them, well, we know what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. He says that if you offend the devotees, what happens? It's like a what? A wild elephant. So most of us haven't seen a wild elephant. I've never seen a wild elephant, except in a video. I saw one in a video. But I haven't seen one live. And of course, we don't see very many elephants, except in the zoo. Right? So when Mahaprabhu gave this analogy, it was in a society where people regularly saw elephants, which we don't. You know, we see foxes and dogs, but not elephants. Now, elephants have an unusual feature. So in most creatures, the female has a period of fertility, right? But not the male. But in elephants, the male is, although the male is always fertile, the male has this particular period of heightened fertility called must. And in that time, the elephant goes crazy. Completely crazy. And the theory of biologists is that this is to give the young bull elephants a chance to mate, because the elephants have a harem, and it's the old bull elephants that are controlling all the females. But when a young bull elephant goes into must, everybody gets out of the way, including the old bull elephants. Nobody will stand in the... Even the old bull elephants who control the harem, they will not stand in the way of a young elephant in must. And the young elephant in must, it forgets its relationship with the trainer. So elephants develop very deep bonds with their trainer, very deep affectionate bonds with people they remember for whole life. But an elephant in must, it will even kill the trainer. It will kill anyone who gets in the way, and they get extraordinary strength. And because elephants are very difficult to castrate, they don't generally have like we have oxen, but with elephants things are internal, and so they don't generally do that. So what do they do to avoid the elephants going into must, because it's so destructive? And they have to retrain them. It's also unpredictable. It's not at a regular time period like it is with females. So they can't predict it. But when they notice the first symptoms, which involve some liquids coming from their forehead and stuff like that, they remove all food and water from the elephant. And if they don't give the elephant any food and water for like 24 hours, then it cuts the system. Because otherwise, if you train elephants, it's really a problem. You know, the elephant goes crazy, it can kill people, and then you have to retrain it all over again. So a wild elephant is really a major event. You know, it's a major event that everything's gone. The training's gone, the relationships are gone, everything's finished. And Mahaprabhu says an offense against a devotee is like this wild elephant. You know, maybe we can think about a tsunami or an earthquake or, you know, fire everywhere, something that's just completely devastating. You know, I'm sure you can see, if you go on the internet, you can find some videos of like floods. You know, the cars are on the street and then there's a tsunami and there's a flood and all of a sudden all the cars are going in the street. Or just recently there was a blizzard in upstate New York where I think in 1 hour, 1 meter of snow, 1 yard of snow fell. Unbelievable. And so, you know, people were driving to work And all of a sudden, everything was just stopped. So an offense against a devotee is like that. But what Madhvacharya says here is, I think, fascinating and something that we see practically. It says, Srila Madhvacharya is quoted from Vedic literature that if one offends the Lord's devotees and does not learn to associate with them, Lord Vishnu personally places barriers in the path of such a person so that he may not enter into the Lord's company. If one offends the Lord's devotees and does not learn to associate with them, Lord Vishnu personally places barriers in the path of such a person so that he may not enter into the Lord's company. It's a pretty serious thing, isn't it? We don't hear this, you know, if somebody commits an offense to the deity or commits an offense to chanting or commits an offense to the holy place. With all these other items of bhakti, we don't hear that the Lord gets so upset that he intentionally places barriers in your spiritual path. But with the devotees, such an important thing. So by association with the devotees, one can come under the control, one can have the Lord come under one's control, which one cannot do with anything else. And by offending the devotees, the Lord blocks you. Now, we think of why. Now, the spiritual world is not just me and God. It's not what it is. It's not just me and God. It's not like this empty place, you know. There's this big void, and it's just about me and God. In the spiritual world, everything is alive. Chintamani Prakrasadmashu Kalpraviksha Lakshabhateshu. Everything. The water is alive. The houses are alive. The dust is alive. It's a world of devotees where we join a community of devotees. It's a kingdom of God. So if you don't deal properly with the Lord's devotees, how can you be there? Just like sometimes in our Hare Krishna movement, we have people who are devotees, but they can't stay in that temple because they can't get along with anybody. Sometimes it's so severe we can't even let them on the property, isn't it? But they're devotees. They chant Hare Krishna. They're devoted to Srila Prabhupada. But we have to say, I'm sorry, you can't come on the property. Or you can't live in the temple, because as soon as they're here, all they do is offend the devotees. Yes, we've had this experience. So Krishna is also like that. You have to stay at a distance if you can't get along with the devotees. The essence of spiritual reality is a community of lovers of Krishna. I once went to an educational conference put on by Christians, and it had a big sign, everyone who loves Jesus should love everyone who loves Jesus. Yeah. If you love God, you should love everyone who loves God. In fact, you should love everyone. Jivaraswara Upaya Krishnara Nityadasa, you see, everyone is a devotee. The Madhyama Bhakta doesn't avoid the demons out of hatred, but they avoid the demons out of humility. And of course, serving the devotees pleases Krishna. I mean, we're all pleased when somebody pleases someone we love. Right? Could somebody be friends with us and try to kill our mother or our child? Or I mean, how is that possible? And Krishna's also like that. We're like that. We take more offense if somebody harms someone that we love than if someone harms us. You know, if somebody insults me, I might tolerate it. But, you know, if you insult my child or my mother, or my, then I'm going to be so much more aggravated. Like Hiranyakashipu was so angry at Vishnu for killing Hiranyaksha, his brother. And Krishna also feels like that. Krishna will tolerate the devotee making some offense against him. Like Lord Brahma said, the child in the womb is kicking the body of the mother, but the mother isn't offended. But when we offend a devotee, Krishna becomes very offended. This is why Krishna arranged for Prahlad to take birth as a son of Hiranyakashipu. Because Hiranyakashipu had legitimately earned the right to govern the universe by his austerity. And Krishna doesn't remove demons by breaking universal laws, otherwise nobody would have faith in the universal laws. But he arranged for a devotee to be in Hiranyakashipu's family, so Hiranyakashipu would offend the devotee, and that's another universal law. Then he could be killed. Or Duryodhan insulting Draupadi. You know, and of course the devotees are so surrendered, sampadevi padejiva nimarane. They agree to take this role to facilitate the Lord's pastimes. Okay, my Lord, I will agree to be insulted. I will agree to be offended. I will agree to have attempts on my life because that will facilitate what's going on in the universe. So Krishna very much loves his devotee. He says, I am in the heart of my devotee. Just like when Durvasa Muni offended Ambarish and he goes directly to the Lord and the Lord says, I'm sorry, I'm in the heart of my devotee. My devotee's in my heart, I'm in his devotee's heart. You have to get forgiveness from my devotee. And Krishna's happy when he sees that the devotees get along. So Krishna Das Kaviraj describes the love of the gopis. When Krishna Das Kaviraj is describing that the gopis' love for Krishna is love and not lust, that they care about the happiness of Krishna rather than wanting Krishna to give them happiness, they are thinking about giving Krishna happiness. And he gives as an example, he says that when the gopis see another gopi with Krishna, they become 100 times happier than when they are personally with Krishna. He says when Srimati Radharani has Krishna in joy with another gopi, she feels 100 million times happier than when she's with Krishna herself. And when Krishna sees this behavior of the gopis, that they're competing to give someone else to Krishna, he becomes very pleased. We see this as sort of a social behavior in the Hare Krishna movement, that we compete to serve each other. Have you noticed that? You know, out in the world, people are, well, let me take the best chair, let me take the best mat, but we compete, let me give you the mat, right? Have you seen it? It's kind of humorous sometimes. Let me serve you. No, let me serve you. And we're competing to serve each other. But Krishna's pleased with that. You know, and Krishna's pleased with that. I was just recently reading in Ananda Vrindavan Champu about the holy festival. You know, Radharani flows some flowers at Krishna, so he starts chasing her, and then she indicates towards another gopi, Shamasakti, so then Krishna goes up to her. Because Radharani's thinking, Shamasakti also wants to enjoy with Krishna. In fact, at the beginning of the holy festival, when Krishna's walking down the road, and Chandravali and her sakis are throwing colors and flowers at each other. So Radharani looks at Krishna and looks at Chandravali, and then she goes a little distance away to pick flowers. And then Krishna has a whole holy festival with Chandravali and her sakis. So this is the behavior among the devotees of Krishna, among the highest devotees of Krishna. Although like the cowherd boys are saying, I'm going to touch Krishna first. So they do that also. But they're, at the same time, they're pushing each other. You go serve Krishna. Now you go serve Krishna now. You be with Krishna now. You be with Krishna. And Krishna Das Kaviraj says when Krishna sees this behavior among the gopis, he becomes very pleased. As also, of course, we have in the Bhagavatam when the Prachetas, the 10 brothers, are cooperating and Lord Vishnu comes and says, because you're all cooperating together, I'm very pleased. And this is normal. Right? As a nice saying in the Bible, Ahine Maitovu Manayam Shevet Ahim Ganyahad. Everything is wonderful when the brothers are sitting together in peace. You know, the town president of the GBC, if they hear all the devotees are cooperating, they become very happy. Who wants to go to a temple and find, oh, this person's fighting with this person, this person's fighting with this person? There's 2 temples I visit sometimes, whereas people are always fighting. They never stop fighting. They just never stop fighting. They get someone as the town president, and then they criticize that person, criticize that person, criticize that person until they drag them down or get them to quit. They get somebody else's town president, and within 1 week, they're criticizing that person. It's just continuous. You know, you go there and you mediate it, and everything's good, and everybody loves each other, and a month later, they're trying to kill each other again. And after a while, you think, well, I really don't want to go there. Right? Or in a family, you know, if you have, I have one family I visit where the father tells me, the second I don't watch my boys, they're fighting. I have to be there all the time and they're fighting. He said, I can never get any peace. So that's not pleasing. So Krishna wants us to cooperate with each other. And it's part of being harmonious with Krishna. You know, if you say, well, I really like you, but I can't stand your family, It's not very pleasing. And Krishna says, well, you know, he loved me, like Prabhupada gives the example, when you get married, then you get a mother-in-law and a father-in-law and sister-in-law and so many part of the family. And we see that when there's problems with one part of the family, it affects everything. So many people will say, you know, I can't get along with my sister-in-law, I can't get along with my mother-in-law, and it's affecting my relationship with my wife or with my husband. So if we can't get along with Krishna's devotees, it affects our relationship with Krishna. Of course, in the spiritual world, there are different groups. There are definitely different groups. There are different groups of cows, different groups of cowherd boys, different groups of gopis. And sometimes they have a friendly competition. But none of them have any malice towards each other. And why else is it so important to get along with devotees? Well, from a practical point of view, the devotees give us a template. How do I practice Krishna? It's all theory. Okay, you do this, you do this, you do this. You have to see it. Yes? Right? You all know what a template is, correct? How do I do that? How do I do? I've got to have a model. You just talk about theory and it's... But as soon as I have a model, then I can understand. Oh, like that. Do it like that. I got a book of some exercises for health, and I'm just reading in the book and looking in it. How am I going to figure out? They said, be very careful that you don't get this thing wrong, that you don't get, and I thought, oh, how am I going to do it just from a book? Oh, but you can get our videos. And you get the video, you look at the model. Oh, they're doing it that way. I said, see, put your neck this way, don't put it that way. Put your arm this way, don't put it that way. Oh, now I know how to do it. So we see, what is a template? How do the devotees do it? Here's somebody who's serving Krishna 24 hours a day. Here's somebody who's really surrendered. Here's somebody, and I can see how to do it. And an inspiration of faith. You get an inspiration of faith. So this one devotee I know who was very severely criticized, justly so. He had done something quite wrong. But the criticism was probably about 5 times more than what he had done wrong. So he had done something very wrong. He had actually done something criminal. But he was being criticized at least 5 times over the extent to what he had done wrong. And the criticism was so severe that basically he lost everything. He lost all of his service, everything. He had just nothing. And then one time I saw him in India, and he was glowing with happiness. He looked like he was eating. He wasn't skinny. He wasn't fat, but he wasn't skinny. He was happy. He had a little place to live. And I talked to him for a while. He told me he had some nice preaching service. It turned out he had quite a number of friends and a nice sangha. And I thought, well, this is interesting. I mean, here's somebody who experienced the kind of thing I'm afraid of, right? We all have some fears. What if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? What if that happens? And he had experienced it. He'd been rejected by the community of devotees, basically. And he was still doing fine. He was still making advancement in Krishna consciousness, and Krishna still gave him some facility. And after seeing him, I thought, I don't really have to be afraid of anything. So it's like that. You know, we see some devotee, it depends what our fears are. Some of us are afraid of getting some disease, or some of us are afraid of poverty, or some of us are afraid of defamation, or some of us are afraid of whatever we're afraid of. We all have some fears. And if we see some devotee who's gone through that and retains their faith and retains their happiness and goes on advancing in Krishna consciousness, then that also gives us faith, isn't it? We see some devotee who's gone through some sort of crisis, we get faith. And just the devotee's faith in general, we see devotees happy in Krishna consciousness, we get faith. Then, also even on the higher levels of Krishna consciousness, the devotees give us attachment for Krishna in a very practical way. So I'm sure you know that as one progresses in Krishna consciousness, one should come to from Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti to Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. One should come from doing bhakti because it's what's in the scriptures and it's logical and I accept it intellectually, to I'm doing bhakti because I've developed some personal taste for Krishna. I've started to think of Krishna as my child or as my friend or as my beloved. And what is the essential practice of Raghunuga Bhakti that differentiates it from Vaidhi Bhakti? Does anybody know? What makes Raganuga Sadhana Raganuga Sadhana instead of Vaidhi Sadhana? Well, it has to, that's the qualification. The qualification is that the motivation is different. But what is the practice? Yes. Yes, exactly. So the difference in practice between Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, the internal difference, the qualification, is when motivation changes. When one's motivation changes, then you can understand by consultation with authorities, okay, now I'm supposed to be practicing Raganuga Sadhana instead of Vaidhi Sadhana. But what is the difference in the practice? The difference in the practice is that you're following the mood of a particular Ragatmika devotee. Instead of just following the devotees in general, there's a particular devotee that one is following. So without the devotee, one doesn't attain bhava and prema in vraja. That's the essential aspect of entering into vraja, is I'm following onto a devotee, a particular devotee. And it's one of the essential items of rasa. So as we all know, rasa, all of you who study the nectar devotion, so rasa has five components. Yes? So one is our own constitutional feeling towards Krishna. Krishna is my son, Krishna is my master, like that. And then one of them is called vibhava. Vibhava is what brings out that feeling. And vibhava has two subcategories, alambana and udipan. Alambana is the shelter. Where do those feelings reside? And then alambana has two subcategories, vishaya and ashraya. So vishaya is Krishna himself. And ashraya is the devotee who loves Krishna in that way. So that one starts feeling, oh, Krishna is my master, Krishna is my friend, Krishna is my son. Because one experiences Krishna, and also because one starts thinking, oh, I want to love Krishna like Mother Yasoda does, or I want to love Krishna like Raktak does, or I want to love Krishna like Subal does, or like Lalita does, or like that. It's connected very much with the devotee, and also as part of vibhava, the devotee is one of the utipans, or one of the inspirations. One may feel inspired by seeing Krishna's flute, or hearing of Krishna's pastimes, or hearing of one of Krishna's devotees. So this association with Krishna's devotees is essential completely all the way through. There's no time at which the association of devotees is not absolutely essential. From the very beginning, to enter Krishna consciousness, right? From Adushraddha is Sadhu Sangha. One cannot do Bhajana Kriya without a guru. And as one progresses and gets rid of the anartas and one comes to Raganuga Sadhana, one gets an association with a Ragatmika devotee. So this, my dear friends, is the door. And then going on here in the 11th canto, Krishna gives some examples. So he said, right, this is the way to get me under your control, is to get the mercy of a devotee. And here it's very similar to what we're talking about today in Chaitanya Charitamrita, even if you're a dog. It's just irrelevant. And so Krishna's giving these examples, and he says, even Vitrasura, Prahlad, Bali Maharaj, Banasura, Mayadhanava. Who did Mayadhanava associate with? Arjuna and Yudhisthira, right? Mayadhanava agreed to make, after Arjuna saved him from the Kandava forest, Mayadhanava agreed to make this palace for Maharaj Yudhisthira. Sugriva, Hanuman, Jambuvan, Gajendra, Jatayu, Kubja. He says the gopis in Vrindavan and the wives of the Brahmanas. So these are the examples Krishna gives to Yudhisthira of people who are seemingly not very high class. You know, if we think who's going to attain enlightenment, you know, you think of somebody born in a good family who performs yoga from the beginning of life, very austere, very scholarly. Do you think of some village cowherding women? Some women taking care of cows? A vulture? You know, just like I remember when I was in college, they were advertising this one man who supposedly had become enlightened when he was only 12. And you know, oh, how can a 12-year-old become enlightened? Or I remember being with Prabhupada, a reporter came and said, "So Swamiji, when did you first realize God?" And Prabhupada, I think this was in New York in 75, and Prabhupada said, "I cannot say from the age." He said, "I have always realized God." He said, "I cannot remember any time when I was not Krishna conscious." And the reporter kept pressing, "But at what age, Swamiji, did you have your first enlightenment experience?" And Prabhupada said, "I cannot say from the age. I've always realized Krishna. But what age, Swamiji? What age was it?" You know, he asked like four or five times. And Prabhupada said, "Well, maybe 4 or 5 years old." So that would be astonishing. We don't think of a four-year-old child attaining enlightenment. Right? So Krishna's giving all these examples, or someone in a demon family. And it's interesting, in the purport, okay, talking about, I was really interested, well, what about the gopis? Why is Krishna giving the example of the gopis as people who attain perfection by association with devotees? And here in the purport it says, having had ample association with devotees, the gopis of Vrindavan rendered service to saintly persons in their previous births. So we know that the gopis in Vrindavan are both the Nityasiddha devotees and Sadhanasiddha devotees. Right, and then among the Sadhanasiddhas, there's two main groups. There's the Rishicharas and the Sruchicharas. There's the personified Vedas and the Rishis in Ramachandra's Leela. So the Rishis who were in Ramachandra's Leela, by association with devotees, like Ramachandra's monkeys. You know, so the sages are meditating in the forest, and Ramachandra's monkey devotees are coming through the forest and associating with these Rishis. And because of that, they became gopis in Krishna Leela. And then in their next lives, they associated with the Nityasiddha gopis. When they appeared in Krishna's Leela, then they associated with, you know, Radharani and Lalita and Saibhya and so forth. And also it says here, I thought, which is very important, they also had association with Tulsi Devi or Vrinda Devi. So, of course, this is one of our main prayers to Tulsi Devi. Seva Adhikara Diye Kara Nijadasi. Please, you give me the Adhikar to enter into the Leela. And then the wives of the Brahmana, which Krishna mentioned in this verse, they had association with women sent by Lord Krishna to sell flower garlands and betel nuts, and they heard about the Lord from them. You know, so the Brahmin women in Krishna's Leela, they would have to purchase things in their life, and they would purchase things from the sellers, from Vraja, who would say, "Oh, you know, we saw Nanda Nandana walking, he's so handsome and he's so wonderful and he did this and he did that." And the wives of the Brahmins, just by hearing from the merchants, the women who were merchants, which also shows that there are women who are merchants, but that's another thing. Anyway, who heard from the women who were merchants, then they also became pure devotees of the Lord. So how do we associate with devotees? That, of course, is the six loving exchanges, which we don't have time to talk about today, but just simply to mention them. That we give gifts from the devotee to the devotees. We receive gifts from the devotees. We give prasadam to the devotees. We receive prasadam from the devotees. We open our mind to the devotees, and we hear them open their mind. And these exchanges should all be to please the other person, right? To actually serve the other person. So we should give prasadam that the other person wants to eat. We should give gifts the other person wants to use. We should reveal our mind about things the other person will take pleasure in hearing. And we also receive from them. Receiving is also one of the items of loving exchanges between devotees. And also in this regard, we could talk about in Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, where Krishna says, those who are dear to him do not cause difficulty to anyone and are not disturbed by anyone else. So not only should we have these positive exchanges with the devotees, but we should be careful not to give any disturbance to them. And even if they do something we don't like, we should not become personally offended. We should not, you know, be fighting with the devotees, even if they do something disturbing with us. So this should be our key. How do we deal with the devotees? How do I serve the devotees? How do I take care of the devotees? And not only the pure devotees. It's not, well, I can offend you because you're a neophyte. You know, there's that story of Dhruva Maharaj before he was a devotee. He tried to get on his father's lap, and his stepmother, Suruchi, she said, "You can't get on your father's lap. I'm his new wife." Some of you who've gone through, you know, divorce and step-parents in your life will relate to this, I'm sure. "I'm your father's new wife. My son with your father, he's the real heir. My son's going to inherit. You don't inherit anything. You're the child of the first wife. We're cutting you out of the will." Huh? This happens, yes, in modern society also. The father remarries, and the stepmother has the husband put everything in the to her own children, and the children from the first wife get nothing. And because she did that, later, when Dhruva became a pure devotee, later, at that time he was not a devotee. And he's described when he decides to worship Vishnu as one of the neophytes, because he was worshiping Krishna for wealth. So Rupa Goswami gives Dhruva as the example of the neophyte devotee who's worshiping Krishna for wealth, the Sakama devotee. But at the time she insulted him, he wasn't a devotee at all. It was only after that he went to see his mother, who said, "You should become a devotee." And he said, "Yes, mother, I'll become a devotee." And then when Lord Vishnu sees him, he says, "Your stepbrother will die in a forest fire or be killed by Yaksha. Your stepbrother will be killed by Yaksha, and your stepmother going looking for him will die in a forest fire." And Prabhupada says in that purport, if one serves a devotee without knowledge, one gets the good result. And if one offends a devotee without knowledge, one does not know where one is going. So if we really want the pleasure of the Lord, we need to be kind to all living entities. What to speak of those who are devotees, even if they are neophyte devotees, even if they are just starting their Agata Sukriti, we should be serving the devotees. Just like, what's his name? Jadu Thakur, I think his name was, where he would bring mangoes and fruits and things to the devotees, and then he would watch, and after they ate and they threw out the pits, he would take the little remaining mango from the pits. And he did this with all classes of devotees. All levels of advancement, all material classes. So this we can examine. What am I doing to serve the devotees today? How am I dealing with the devotees today? If my elephant starts showing signs of madness, do I stop giving it food and water for 24 hours? As soon as I notice, oh, my elephant's going into must. Oh, okay, no food and water for you. So we should be alert whenever we have some difficulty with the devotees, that we just stop immediately and always be focused on how can I serve the devotees? How can I serve the devotees? How can I serve the devotees? So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We could take maybe one or two questions.